CliffCentral.com.
What a great song to start your Monday morning. Linkin Park with Burn It Down. Oh, yes. But let's not burn anything down today. Here's something interesting. Just to start off with, I got an email from a guy on Friday. I want to give him credit, but I can't find the email now. About this.
Our moral compass.
He says this guy was making fun of Jeff Radebe, who said something similar in Parliament before him. Now, I can't figure out, because to me, both these people have a problem pronouncing moral compass in their own way. But it doesn't sound like this dude from the Vryheidsfront Plus is making fun of Jeff Radebe. They say it very differently. I think they both can't pronounce it properly.
Hmm.
Listen to this quickly. Here's Jeff.
Of this moral compass.
No. That's not Jeff. Then he would be mocking Jeff.
We must find our moral compass and remember that we are all here because we are mandated by the voting public.
All right, so that was how he said it. You got it? Right?
Our moral compass.
Now, that doesn't sound to me like...
The needle of the moral compass.
Yeah. I think they just both can't say it properly. But there, you know, there's a bit of conspiracy theory going on here because he said to me, oh, no, Jeff is definitely being made fun of by the Vryheidsfront Plus, which wouldn't make sense because the Vryheidsfront Plus don't always have the best English pronunciation themselves. I think they're both just wrong.
Yeah, because, you know, neither one of them have English as their mother tongue.
Right, correct.
So it's entirely plausible that they mispronounced it, which is perfectly fine.
And yeah, of course it is, because haven't we got past the point where we take someone's accent as a reason
no,
to...
No, we haven't. We still make fun of people because of their accents. We do it every day.
No, look, I find it funny, but then I'm a horrible person. So, yeah. You know, it's different.
Our moral compass.
You like that?
I'm okay with it.
That the president has lost its moral compass.
I'm sorry, I'm very childish about this. I find it funny. So that was the first email. Then I got a great email. You know, we discussed this on Friday. This is from Absolutely Anonymous.
Okay.
I was listening to you guys on Friday. It was hilarious to find how mortified and surprised you were, at the very least, about people masturbating in the office bathrooms. I do this all the time.
Oh, no.
I don't even think about it. Sorry. I don't even think it's about anything other than just being horny at inappropriate times. Then you go to the web and you work it. I guess what keeps me doing that is that it's comfortable and you certainly do get relieved afterwards. Trust me, every office I've worked in for a little over a week, anywhere in the world, I think I have jerked off in. This helps your composure, especially when you are looking at colleagues who do turn you on. Okay, after this email, I will go and masturbate. I'm feeling quite horny now.
Oh, you have lost your moral compass.
That's absolutely anonymous. And then I got this one. This just came in now, about 10 minutes ago, from No Name. Hey, Gareth and team, please keep me anonymous for today. I recruited my ex as a listener. Having recently been shown the door by her, you guys have carried me through with your wit and sound bites like the modal compass. Shame, and I've stopped wailing my ex's name like Oscar going on about Driva. Love you guys and keep it up. So that's from No Name. Hey, I'm sorry about the breakup, but you seem to have things under control.
Don't worry, No Name. New pussy is on its way.
KC says, good morning, team. In Cape Town, we coloreds call masturbation scummel. Well, I scummel at work, and I've even had sex at work. I live with my girlfriend, and I still scummel regularly, and I will make it my duty to fill a 2-liter bottle. Use my man juice to deface the Zuma statue. I'm not rapey. I'm just very horny at times, and a quick scummel at work is the perfect thing for me. Anyway, have a great day.
Well, as long as you say he's not rape, you know, I'm fine.
Oh, yeah.
That really just set me off.
Wiped everything off. No, that's fine.
Because up until that point, you had issues with him.
Yeah. Something a little more savory. Ashley says, I'm quite proud of the fact that I'm a listener from the start of CliffCentral.com. People still moan to me about how bad the morning radio options are now, and I ask them why they have not woken up to CliffCentral.com yet. And someone needs to draw the statue as Supra kissing his backside. That'll get some attention. Yeah, that's true. And watch for that to come out. Zapiro is probably already busy drawing it as we speak. Gareth, did you read the Matthews Poza statement, this is from Supernova, this weekend? And since when did Edward Zuma become the speaker for South African citizens? Has Edward Zuma been talking again? He should really keep quiet. He doesn't seem to help his father's case in any way. Not that his father's case is going to be helped by anybody at this point. This man is finding himself increasingly on the outside looking in. That's just my opinion, though. So, interesting from Supernova and from Jacques telling us that Matthews Poza piece in the Daily Maverick is well worth a read. Have you had a look at it? Anybody?
No.
I maybe have to read that after the show.
He says, please, for once, serve your people and go. Go now.
Wow.
If you don't, history will judge you to be the chief architect of the destruction of the ANC, amongst other words.
Yeah, I just saw one of his quotes, which was like he doesn't want to be part of the intellectual funeral or intellectual death of the ANC, something along the lines. It's
heavy, heavy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Good men cannot be silent in the face of evil.
All right.
Not so subtle.
No, that sounds very hard-hitting from the former Treasurer General of the ANC, Matthews Poza. Okay, so we'll take a look at that. Right, more emails and stuff, but I'll get to those later on. Mubs, how about you? What do you got for us?
Okay, so the killing of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother Kim Jong-nam is still making news. After he was...
I don't mean to lie. I laugh. I don't think it's funny that a man had to lose his life in any which way, and he seems to have been poisoned. But
no, I was watching that on the news this morning because they're releasing all the footage of that woman putting her hands on his face in the LOL shirt.
In the LOL shirt,
yeah. Oh, they've got footage of it?
Yes, there's footage being released now.
Because it happened...
It's like sweet shirt, that LOL shirt.
Okay, then.
Oh, and her hands on the face is what poisoned him.
Well, no, they're saying that a pen was used, something was sprayed in his face, which is quite common practice when it comes to assassination styles in that part of the world.
A pen?
Yes, yes. So,
this is a poison pen. I have a pen. I have some poison.
I have a pen.
I have some poison. Poison pen.
I have a pen.
Kim Jong. What was his name again?
Kim Jong Nam.
Kim Jong Nam.
Kim Jong Nam. Kim Jong Nam. I have my poison pen. That's right. All right.
Okay,
so that's how it works.
So, South Korean and U.S. officials, of course, get involved. Why don't you just? They believe that Kim Jong-nam was killed by agents from the reclusive North, whose diplomats in Kuala Lumpur have sought to prevent an autopsy on the 46-year-old's body and demanded it be handed over. Now, Malaysian police yesterday said that they had arrested a North Korean man in connection with the murder of Kim Jong-nam and that four other North Korean suspects had fled Malaysia on the day of the attack at Kuala Lumpur.
Wow.
The South Korean Prime Minister told a meeting of South Korea's National Security Council that it was nearly certain that North Korea is the one behind the killing of Kim Jong-nam, who is the eldest son of the late North Korean Kim Jong-il. You've got to get the names right here. There's so many Kim Jongs.
Yeah. It's very complicated.
Nam had often spoken out publicly against his family's dynasty and, you know, how they control the nation.
Oh,
and
that's the first
nuclear
problem.
And it had been reported before that, you know, people have been trying to kill Kim Jong-nam for quite some time now, which is why, you know, people are now looking to looking at North Korea saying, we think this reeks of sibling rivalry taken to the extreme. And as we know, Kim Jong-un has no issues taking out his family members.
No.
He's had many an aunt and uncle killed via firing squad just for looking at him in the wrong way. So, yeah, four suspects now have been taken in. But again, you know, people saying that we're thinking that this assassination comes out of North Korea.
Sounds bloody interesting. I mean, this whole thing is very they're so secretive in North Korea. That's what makes this mysterious. You never know how these things work in that country. It's a totally different place to anywhere else on Earth. They may as well be Martians, sealed off from the rest of us. I'd love to see it. I would love to go there. I know they keep it sanitized and you're not allowed to see stuff that would make the country look bad. You know, they have a minder who travels with you everywhere you go if you go to North Korea. And the first place you go is to Kim Il-sung's tomb.
You have to?
Yeah, you have to. You start off, you go there. That's the first place they take you.
But what if you don't want to go?
No, you got to go.
Wait, sorry. Is this like on a tour?
You come my country, I show you what I want you see.
What, do you think you just arrived there and you go chill by the pool and watch George Clooney movies?
I mean, I didn't realize that I would be forced to go to someone's grave. And
yeah, well, that's why it is not on your top 10 list of places to go and visit, right?
Now, I just don't understand with King John Nam, you know, there were whispers that his family were trying to kill him. What more do you need to know that you live in a screwed up country, you know, your brother's crazy and the ruler, and they're trying to kill you, and you go, oh no, not I, not my family, because I'd be out of there in 2.3 seconds. I don't need any other proof.
He kind of looks like the guy from Gangnam Style if he were to completely fall off the rails. Like, he just looks like a guy that's just been boozing for 20 years.
Well, listen, Kim Jong-un doesn't look so great either. And Kim Jong-un, he's very overweight, and he seems to me to be a strange... He's just a spoiled little kid. Like, I don't know. That whole country is just bizarre. I find the whole thing very strange.
See, but Kim Jong-un looks like Leonardo DiCaprio on Oscar night. Kim Jong-nam looks like Leonardo DiCaprio on the beach.
Okay, I got you. All right. I got you.
Ah, dad bud.
Can I ask you something?
Uh-huh.
Does splashing the cash make you happy?
Well, yeah, because then you have cash.
No.
What, like using money recklessly?
No, does spending money make you happy?
In the moment,
in
yes.
In the moment, but then you always regret it afterwards.
Okay.
Especially if it was an impulse thing.
Well, listen to this quickly. There's one woman who's a millionaire in Britain. She says the secret of happiness is being able to fit everything you own into one box. Her name is Amanda Prowse.
What?
She says the secret of happiness is fitting everything into a box. She looks down. And she looks into whether splashing the cash really makes you happy. And she said one pair of jeans, two T-shirts, two dresses, a couple of tunic tops, a pair of pajamas, a dressing gown, four sets of mismatched underwear, five pairs of socks, some costume jewelry, a pashmina, in case it rains, is like the checklist of someone packing for a mini break. But actually, there is little else you need to add to that modest list of clothes before you have the sum total of what she considers to be her most precious personal possessions. In addition to that ultimate capsule wardrobe, she owns a laptop, a pot full of pens, pencils, and a pair of scissors, two precious wooden tulips that her grandfather hand-carved for her grandmother 70 years ago. Her makeup bag contains a set of brushes, one lipstick, false eyelashes, and glue, along with mascara, blush tint, nail polish, and a pot of concealer, foundation, eyeshadow, and brow tint. Footwear, no more than a pair of boots, flip-flops, trainers, and Wellington boots. Throw in a bottle of perfume, a small mirror, and a suede handbag, and the list is complete. She says she could put all of that stuff into one plastic storage box that sits on the kitchen table with room to spare. And she says that is her most important list of possessions, and she is worth millions. Isn't that amazing?
Mm.
I find this fascinating.
No.
If people can do this. Because I find this like so intriguing. Like, wouldn't you want to try that?
Uh-uh.
She says she doesn't own the roof under which she sleeps. She doesn't own a car. She uses the bus to go into town. But she has written books about her family life that have made her richer than she could ever have dreamed. And yet, she says, I own less now than I did when I was a cleaning lady, earning a few pounds an hour, struggling to pay the gas bill with credit card debt so huge they'd keep her awake at night. She says, now she's a millionaire. She's got everything in that box. She's as happy as can be. Isn't that amazing? How could you? That sounds almost transformative. We're all so obsessed with how much we have and how much we don't have and how much we need.
It's like a ball and chain. It's almost as if she's just freed herself from that kind of thinking.
She's found a new way of identifying herself by being ultra simplistic. And, you know, we always talk about how simple we are as humans. We're very basic. Why not just live by that and we might actually go somewhere?
Well, I find this really, really interesting.
See, you only have one outfit. It's all black.
Hold up.
I mean, how are you ever going to be contesting against this?
First and foremost, I'm kind of disturbed by the fact that there's no gum or toothbrush or toothpaste in this entire situation of hers.
Well,
because we don't like nobody
English
being stanky. Secondly, I think it's because, you know, now that I found out her backstory, if I have to be Dr. Phil on the situation, you know, it was kind of tough for her and she was, you know, she felt constricted by, you know, her finances and paying things off. And now she just wanted to get rid of that. Don't tell us, General Tom, Dick and Jablanis, that we shouldn't aspire to be in Monaco on a yacht. No, I don't want a little plastic box with my belongings. I want a whole damn mansion, compound, wait. What are they called? Ladies in waiting.
Oh, you want all that?
Oh, abso-frickin-lutely.
You want a lady in waiting.
I don't know what they're for.
What are
but
you
I just
do
want
a lady in waiting, Sia? I'm interested in this.
Well, like, ever since I heard about what Sarah Ferguson went, you know, like went through when she was living in Buckingham Palace, when she had to leave, she couldn't even operate a toaster and she put in like a spoon into the microwave. That's what I want. I want so much oblivion. I don't even know that you can't put spoons into the microwave. You know why? Because of a lady in waiting.
Oh, the Queen Mother. The best story is the Queen Mother was sitting there and her TV was on Sky or ITV or something.
Mm-hmm.
And someone came in to visit her, one of her friends, and said to her, oh, why do you watch that? She said, well, I don't know how to change the channel.
There we go.
She'd never had the channel changed. She'd never done it herself. She didn't know what the remote was.
Yes.
So she just sat there and watched whatever was left on because her servant wasn't there to turn the next channel on for her.
That's it.
You want that? You want to be that ignorant?
Well, okay, just to bring more substance to my point, I'm not saying that we should all be materialistic or we should aspire just for material wealth. But I think materialism has this bad connotation of that it's wrong or that there's nothing good about it, but it's about actually if I can afford to shift my family off to 2 weeks on this amazing adventure of, you know, being in the Swiss Alps, then there's I see nothing wrong with that.
That's a really good thing though. It's an experience and it's something you can do together.
But even if it's just for myself and I am happy going to Paris and shopping my head off, then do that. But don't tell me that we should all, you know, have a little cardboard box and just have two things.
I don't think it's like, oh, you live a horrible life. You must be like me. It's more like you get inner peace and you get ways of structuring your life better by just not focusing on so much shit.
I don't think she's criticizing people who are materialistic. Yeah. She's just saying she's found this way.
You're taking oddly defensive.
For her.
No. Yeah. You're not normally defensive at all. You're like, no, leave me alone.
That's my thing. Because if you want me to put my stuff in a box, then it has to be a diamond encrusted box first and foremost. And a box the size of this room. Then we can talk.
Well, listen, maybe there's merit in this. How many of us go to sleep at night worrying about our finances?
Every night of my life.
Exactly. So, you know what? Maybe this woman, who's now got millions because she's written these successful books, maybe she's discovered a way to not have those thoughts before she goes to sleep at night. And maybe she's happier because of that.
What would be your fundamentals if you could
If I had to put my life in a box?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, Sia. This is impossible. See, I'm a bit of a collector. Like, to me, an ancient book or a valuable historical artifact is worth spending endless amounts of. If I had billions and billions of dollars, my house would be like a museum. And not because I would want to show it off to other people, but because having those things would be important to me. You know, I watch
these.
It's
your happy place.
Yeah. I feel so excited about being surrounded by ancient things that track the course of human civilization. So if I could, if I had endless amounts of money, I would be buying up ancient Egyptian stone monuments. And I would be gathering books printed when the first printing press came out. And I would do that kind of thing, not for their intrinsic value, not for their real value, but because to me they would mean so much more than I think to half the people I know. I just love that stuff. So if I had to put my own little time capsule together to continue a discussion from the first hour of today, man.
Well, let's make it easier.
Millions of things that I put in there. They're just really a great human artifact. If I could go back in time and collect the dagger that Julius Caesar was stabbed with, if I could collect one of the nails from the cross, if the Jesus story is true, if I could collect all these things, I would just want them because it would be amazing to look at something that was 2,000 or more years old and say, this was the actual thing used.
Yeah.
At this pivotal moment in human history.
I think for the purpose of this discussion, let's make it all easier. What would you put your wardrobe in a box with? Like, that's more about it.
Okay.
Because I think we all spend so much crap, excess money on crap.
I'd do a Sia. I'd just put a black T-shirt, a really good pair of black jeans. Because you got to have the good stuff.
Yeah,
right?
We had this discussion with Randall. Items. I think that's more where this conversation could become constructive.
The pair of jeans that fits you the best has to go in there. A pair of shoes that you can use anywhere.
Okay, but now you actually need to create your wardrobe. This box is now your wardrobe, basically.
This sounds like homework. Why don't we all do some homework on this and come back with our list?
Well, there's this and the time capsule. We've got a busy week. Sunday, Monday.
Right. But I just thought that would be interesting. Well, I've started a whole discussion.
Well, I think it's more like if your house was on fire, what would you save in a box? Like, that's the mentality. Because then you really, truly realize what you need.
See, clothes I wouldn't save. You can always buy those. I'd put Carl in the box, my dog.
Yeah.
And I'd probably put some sentimental things of value only really to me into it.
What about you, my bud?
I mean, in my mind, the logical thing to do is to take documents that you need.
Oh, you see.
So, take your passport, take your ID,
right.
take my asthma pump, because you know I'm going to die in the smoke, from the smoke inhalation. Yeah, I mean,
you're sensible. It's very, very pragmatic, you. Uh-huh.
Now, you see, I don't want to sound crazy here, but in the process of actually moving out of home, you know, in our family house in Durban, I actually have a box, and everyone knows, like, you know, if the building were to go on fire, that's the only thing they need to save of mine. And that has, like, things that are important to me. So, like, I actually have a photo album. I know I'm one of those crazy people. Actual literal pictures.
Yeah.
But like things from my childhood, because my parents don't care to save them, so I have to save them for myself. But that's that, and I think I'm good and done.
What would you take, Ben? The house is burning down.
Passports.
Meowses.
Right.
Meowses.
Yeah. Oh, you see, you guys have responsibilities.
That's pretty much all you really need. Everything else, there's certain books I wouldn't mind taking, but it's quite difficult to run up the stairs and cherry pick certain things.
I mean, you don't have a lot of time.
Do you not keep like souvenirs from your childhood?
Yeah, somewhere they're scattered around, but they're not exactly precious.
Oh wow. Okay.
There's certain cool things, but tomorrow's a new day.
When I think of Sia's list and I hear what he says about his childhood, I just.
You seen my childhood?
I just think of this.
Cause I've been looking around.
Right. Have you seen my childhood? It's in a box in Durban.
In a box. Right, okay, enough of the nonsense. What else is going on that we need to know about?
So speaking about, you know, looking at your life and making sense of it all, well, some elderly people in America are starting a trend that you can only just shake your head at, really. So there are some people who really want to show how their vehement dislike to President Donald Trump, rather,
right,
by actually also emphasizing in their death. So, 87-year-old Liz Smith passed away on the 13th of Feb, surrounded by family, you know, in a hospice. Doesn't that sound wholesome and wonderful as it is? But
sure.
She had one
death, but yeah, okay.
You know, but hey, you know, you're 87, it's a good way to go. But she had one specific request.
What's that?
That in her obituary, there's a line that states, Liz is smiling now, not to be living during the Trump presidency. Like, why, people? How
really
absolutely petty is this? Exactly. Also, so this is a real big trend happening as well. A 68-year-old passed away last year in May and said, also specified that in his obituary he would like, faced with the prospect of voting for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, Mary Ann Noland of Richmond chose instead to pass into the eternal love of God on Sunday. So that's rather showing that didn't even want to vote for Trump or Clinton. But I just find that this is petty. Like,
people are taking stuff way too personally.
Oh yeah. Wayne Morris lastly then said that he just wants to made it known, rather, that in his obituary and actually read out at his funeral was the line, "Do not vote for Donald Trump."
Huh. Oh, too late for that one.
Like, what? But I mean, this is like your dying wish.
Yeah, it's kind of strange.
For everybody to know that you do not like Trump, not reflecting on your own life.
I mean, how important is he to you that you allow this to be the final testimony before you disappear off the earth? Come on. It's ridiculous.
That's what you'll be known for.
It'd be like me saying, in my dying breath, I really hope Jacob Zuma resigns. It's so unimportant as your mortality slips away. Come on.
And then also sticking in terms of death, sadly, late former President Nelson Mandela's gravesite in Nkunu will be open
to the public. Oh, good. That's not sad. I would want to go and see that, wouldn't you?
Well, there's a bit of a plot twist. So the foundation actually thinks this will be great. Keeping in mind that next year Mandela would have turned 100 years old.
Uh-huh.
But
it's the centenary.
Oh, yes. But Winnie Madikizela Mandela is actually going to court to try and stop this from happening.
Why?
Simply because she's still in the legal process of wanting a hand in the family homestead in Nkunu. So that's still a legal thing.
You know, this is really selfish. This is, to me, for a woman who we call the mother of the nation, she should really open the doors of that gravesite to the nation. There are millions of people in this country and the world who would flock there. You could charge them money. You could. I don't mind paying some money to the upkeep of the property and the estate. I mean, people go and visit Princess Diana's grave, and it's made Althorp a real thriving business again. Gordon was never going to make the money that it does out of keeping herds of cattle or growing some vegetables that it could out of tourism here. And it's a lonely little place in the middle of nowhere. I've been there before. There's no reason for anyone to go there unless there is this site open for them to go and see. No one is heading down to the Transkei to hang around in Kunu. Trust me, lovely and charming as the place is, it's not a good enough reason. If you open this gravesite up, it could do wonders for tourism to that part of the Eastern Cape. I don't see how anyone could be against this unless they're so selfish and interested in their own. And even if you are a selfish person who's interested in your own purse, frankly, this is how you're going to make some cash, honey. If we're led to believe that the reports on Winnie Madikizela Mandela's finances are true, she doesn't have a lot of money in the bank. Remember, Madiba had to give her a whole lot of money before he even died? And that's why he didn't give her any in the will? Do you remember this? Am I the only one who remembers this?
When was this? A couple of years before.
Before he died, he handed out a huge piece of his personal money, a large slice of the pie, to Winnie because she was in financial trouble. She didn't have any money. So he gave her what would have been her inheritance early, while he was still alive.
Oh.
That's why she didn't get anything in the will. Do you remember all those shenanigans? And people go, it was so wrong of Madiba not to give.
Yes.
Then they revealed that he'd actually given her most of her money before he even died. Now, Winnie should open up the grave site. They should charge people, I don't know, 10 rand. Don't make it expensive. Let local people be able to come too. They don't have a whole lot of money. 10 rand a person. You could make millions of the number of people who would visit. And give some of that to Winnie. Give her, 20% of it. Divide it. Give every family member 5% of it. There's enough room for everybody.
Well, I think the fight is about the fact that why does she need, a hand in running or a say in the Kunu homestead?
There's a whole complicated situation there too, because Mandla and there are other grandchildren who are involved, and then there's Magaziwe and there's Winnie, and there are too many people here who are trying to live off the legacy of one great man. And they all want a piece of the action. This is what really happens when someone dies. Everybody, once they've been buried for a while, forgets that that person even existed, and it becomes about what can I get out of the estate. Some of the family members are very honorable and decent about this, it's got to be said. Some of them are not. That's why the foundation should make this call. The foundation are the ones who have to look after Nelson Mandela's legacy. The family just squabbling over the bones. It's terrible. Open this thing up. People want to go and visit. They want to pay respect to the greatest man who's ever lived in South Africa. So stop it. You're being very selfish. If you keep this thing closed and you don't let ordinary people in, then it's just a family graveyard and you have to pay for its upkeep. Trust me, I know.
Jeez.
Open it up. Yeah. God damn it. Would you think Madiba would want to keep it all private and quiet? He would have said, let the people come and visit. He liked people. Bring their children. Let them come and see him. It's his final resting place. It's an important thing. We had this huge, big, massive international state funeral for Nelson Mandela. What, now we must just pretend, you know, nothing's going on, nothing to see here.
So let's see how that will turn out at the Supreme Court of Appeal.
All right. It's going to the Supreme Court of Appeal, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's no messing around there. Okily dokily. Have we got Cassie on? I want to speak to her quickly because it is Teen Suicide Prevention Week, and this is one of those things that we actually do support here. I mean, we support a lot of different causes, but this is one that I feel is important because there are so many young people in this country who are dealing with the difficulties of being, you know, being young. I mean, there's a lot of stress these days for young people that there might not have been for other generations. There might have been worse stress for other generations, but we don't want people committing suicide. We don't want people taking their own lives for reasons of stress, anxiety, finances, health, love, bad matric results. These are not good reasons to take your own life.
Yeah.
Really, in the big scheme of things, you may have the most incredible life ahead of you. You might just be going through a tough time right now. So I'm not in any way qualified to talk about this, but Cassie is. We've spoken to her a couple of times before. How are you, Cassie?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Good. The South African Depression and Anxiety Group, SADAG. And we've been talking to you for a couple of years in a row now in Teen Suicide Prevention Week. So this is the week, and SADAG are doing a lot of things. Do you want to tell us what you're up to this week to spread the word?
So while teen suicide prevention should be happening throughout the year, and we keep on doing the work, this week specifically, we focus on a few different projects to really put it on the map and get people talking about it. So what we're doing on Friday, we're actually hosting an online chat through our Facebook page. So anyone anywhere in the country can actually log in and speak to experts for free and get free help. So whether you're a teen yourself or someone going through a difficult time or a parent or a teacher, you can log in on Friday at 1 o'clock until 2 o'clock, or again at 7 o'clock till 8 o'clock, and we'll have experts answering all your questions. We're also really excited this year because we're able to host some workshops around the country through a Akeso clinic, and we're hosting workshops this Saturday in Randburg, and then in Mshlanga, Durban, and then in Kenilworth, Cape Town. And the great thing is that we're going to have some fantastic experts, Q&As, information, and it's open for free to the public to attend. And I think it just gives people an opportunity to go get some help, get some tips, and really try to prevent something that should be, you know, so easily preventable.
Mm. Well, listen, I mean, how big is the problem in South Africa? Do we have any idea? Do we have a grip on the statistics for teen suicide?
We do. And some of the stats are incredibly alarming, especially for South Africa. When you look at nearly 31% of teen suicide attempts needed medical treatment. So that means being hospitalized, seeing a doctor. That's a large amount of teenagers. When we know that 9.5% of all teen deaths are due to suicide, that's nearly 10%. You know, when you think of a classroom of how many teens who have attempted suicide or felt suicidal, it's incredibly sad. And especially when we get so many calls that come into our call center from teens who just feel like there's no hope, like there's no solution, and that the only way to end their problems is to end their life. But again, those are the calls that do get to us. We're trying to reach the hundreds and thousands of people who don't know about SADAG and don't know that there is help, literally a call away.
Yeah, I think that this is an important thing for people to be aware of. And also, sometimes it's just a cry for help, but sometimes it's really just, I'm going to exit stage left. And there's very little you can do on occasions like this, because the warning signs aren't always easy to read, right, Cassie?
And I think a lot of people don't know the warning signs. And, you know, you mentioned such a good point where that myth that, you know, suicide is attention-seeking behavior and they're just looking for attention.
Right.
You have to ask yourself, how bad is their situation that suicide is the only way to get attention or to get people to, you know, to take them seriously? And I think if we just educate ourselves on the warning signs, it's easier to look out for. So obviously the most recommended cycle when someone talking about suicide or ending their life, saying things like, I wish I wasn't here anymore, or everyone would be better off if I was dead. What we're also finding now, which is a bit different to, say, 5 or 10 years ago, is that people are going to social media to express these feelings, saying, you know, goodbye, you know, their goodbye messages on Facebook or Twitter. They're putting up some messages or hints about death or dying and wanting to end their life. And I think that's what we tend to forget. Instead of just liking a post or ignoring it, why don't you pick up the phone and say, hey, what's up? What's going on? How can I help you? Right. Obviously, we know that depression is the leading...
Cassie, hello?
Depression for a long distance. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry, I just lost you for a second.
So I think, you know, depression... Ah, sorry, the signal on the east, not so great. But with depression being the leading contributor to suicide, I think we have to learn as much as we can to prevent someone from feeling so bad that suicide is their only option.
So let's say you read a friend or a family member or someone you care about, someone you know, you read their post on social media and they say that they're thinking of ending it all. And maybe it is just a cry for help some of the time. But you say the first thing you should do is pick up the phone and say, hey, are you all right?
Absolutely. You know, so many times we hear people who just, you know, nowadays you can even put a sad face to a post or you like it or you kind of ignore it because you don't really know what to do. And then, unfortunately, we hear people passing away and taking their own life and loved ones calling us saying, yeah, I wish I did something. I could have done something differently. So don't wait for that moment. Pick up the phone, speak to them and say, hey, I'm very worried about you. I see that post. What's going on?
Because
do you want to talk about it?
We talk about social media a lot of the time as being, so, you know, not necessarily good for our mental health. But in this case, it is the place where people put their innermost feelings a lot of the time. Not everybody, but some people do. And if you are going to say goodbye to the world, many people have and do put this stuff on social media first. So it's almost like an early warning system that we can access at any time to be a part of the solution rather than the problem.
Exactly. And I think, you know, we should utilize that and say, okay, I see something is wrong. And exactly what you said, you know, people feel a lot more comfortable to post something on Facebook or Twitter than to send a message or to speak to someone face to face. So let's use it to our advantage and try to, you know, prevent someone from doing major harm or even taking their own life. If we've got a tool that we can actually use as a red light, as a warning sign, you know, we should use whatever we can. And again, to prevent that would have, should have, could have moment.
Yeah.
And that's what we're hoping more people do. And also, you know, just talking about suicide, it seems to be such a taboo topic. No one really wants to talk about depression or mental health. And it's, you know, it only happens to other people. But if we start talking about it and making it a topic of conversation, you'll be so surprised when someone says, well, I've actually felt like that before, or I'm actually feeling really depressed at the moment. You know, opening up that communication is so, so key.
Yeah, I love it. You guys do great work, and I think if anybody needs to get hold of you, it's probably a good time to drop in those contact details.
Thank you, and thanks again for the support. So we have a toll-free helpline, which you can call any day of the year. It's 0800-567-567. If anyone doesn't have enough airtime to call us from their cell phone, they can SMS us on 31393. Mm-hmm. They can also visit our website where we have all the information about the free workshops, about our Facebook Friday, as well as a toolkit of, you know, accessing help for depression and teen suicide. So please do go visit our website at www.sadag.org and reach out for help, you know, before it's too late.
Cassie Chambers from SADAG, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great Monday.
Cool. We'll see you here in the studio soon. Cassie from SADAG, that's the South African Depression and Anxiety Group, Teen Suicide Prevention Week. We'll put up all those details on cliffcentral.com for you too. You see, they even look after the people who don't have airtime. Isn't that nice? I mean, you didn't think of them. What if you're feeling suicidal and you don't have the airtime to tell everybody how you're feeling? Come on. You need to be able to connect with the rest of humanity. It's part of the way that you'll feel better. And I don't mean that in any glib way. I know that depression's a real thing and it's chemical. And even though people like me don't know as much about it and we're not as empathetic as we might be some of the time, I am doing my best to understand it. I'm at the opposite end of the scale. Mania.
Sus. No. Yeah.
Trying to, you know, make sense of this stuff. So listen, here is some hope. For anybody who is potentially full of really bad memories, and maybe you've had a very tough life, Ben found an article Some scientists say that they'll be able to remove the bad memories. Is that right?
Well, it's been going on a few years now, because people are always doing really great things. Scientists aren't just working out, like, stuff around porn and all other things with useless stats. They're actually doing things that are interesting.
I didn't know a lot of scientists were involved in porn.
And countless surveys.
How many surveys and studies have we revealed in this show that are completely useless and trivial?
All right, good point.
Okay, so there are scientists doing something quite interesting. So if you've got memories that are plaguing you that define who you are and it's not a positive thing whatsoever, or you have fears and phobias, all because of past experiences, you can now rewire this in the brain. So we watch programs like Westworld, and, you know, like the hosts are, you know, they'll be raped, murdered, whatever, and then they get sort of reset.
They get wiped clean.
Yeah. That's not kind of going to be what's going to happen. I know everyone loves a quick fix, so you can go in there and press a button. But the thing about our memories is that they're associated with certain reactions and emotions. And that's what really makes the effect. So we all have memories, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's what we assign to them is what makes them so dangerous to us. So there's these new studies that are going around where you can literally just take a certain drug and you'll be able to manipulate these memories a lot easier. So there's memory recall tests that go along with the medication, and then you can have things that are kind of taken away. So there was a test done on arachnophobia people.
Mm-hmm.
So they just obviously look at a spider and they shit themselves, right? So they take the medication and they take it over a series of time. And then where they would normally see a spider and run around and just want to, like, kill themselves, they look at a spider and go, spider.
Okay.
So it is that quick and it's that good.
Now that's
because
cool.
If we look at our memories, right? Now, say, for instance, when I met Sia, there were certain emotions and things that happened right then, okay?
Maybe you were in a bad mood, you were having a difficult day, and your association with Sia, not that you two have a bad relationship, but let's imagine that you met someone under really strained circumstances. You might just never be able to get rid of that bad first impression.
Yeah. And that first impression will be tied with apprehension, shock, horror. But now, it's just you. So if I look at that without the emotion, I take it away. That's not a bad memory. It's just a memory. So it doesn't actually have a hierarchy towards me.
But I'm interested to know how they, like, specifically work on that one incident or that one emotion,
well,
instead of, like, wiping out the entire system by mistake.
That would be interesting. I suppose you'd have to zero in on particularly that part of the brain. But then how's that any different to therapy? You take a situation and they break it down. And you make sense of it. You know, you can overcome your fears through therapy. It's just a much longer, more difficult process. If drugs could help, if neuro, what do they call it? It's sort of, obviously the neuroscience in terms of the actual nerve cells involved and the synapses involved with storing those memories. But maybe there are ways that we can now, through science, zero in on the problem microscopically, find out where it's housed, and help the therapist along. So there'll still be therapy, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, we won't be popping these in the morning in our own capacity.
You won't just sit in a machine. It'll survey your brain and remove all your bad memories. You'll have to know what they are. You'll have to open up about them. They'll be able to do some tests on you. It's going to be a process.
Yeah. But essentially, numerous studies have been used where they're blocking the chemical called noripiprene.
Norepinephrine.
That one. Well, that,
noripiprene. Yeah. That sounds like a woman living in Sussex.
Now this makes me
noripiprene.
Yeah. No, well, I'm noripiprene.
I'm noripiprene.
All right, but this makes me suspicious of all those sports names, Ben. If you just call this one noripiprene.
No, but sport is his thing.
Sports, you get first and last names. Noripiprene.
Noripinephrine.
Like noripinephrine, right? Okay, so we can block that up, because noripinephrine makes us very emotional. So that's where the fight or flight thing is engaged.
Yeah.
So we dull that a bit, and then we don't get so uptight.
Okay, so I mean,
so from a chemical point of view, that's the one we need to start eliminating.
So if you, for example, regretted having met a few people and you thought, you know, I could do with erasing having met these people entirely. It doesn't sound like that's what it will be able to do.
Not necessarily like entirely erase it, but the thing about our memories is that they can be manipulated. So our memories are what we believe, right? And as we get older.
You put four people who watched the same thing into a room and they'll all have different experiences of how it looked.
Mm-hmm.
That's why eyewitnesses are not, and they've proven this time and time again, eyewitnesses are not necessarily reliable, even when they saw something just a few minutes ago, because everybody remembers things differently, because you have different emotional triggers. You have different sieves and filters through which you take on and create a memory in your brain. You could be emotionally very, very... You could find yourself, open to, exposed to, likelier to remember something emotionally than to remember the actual facts.
You know, receptive to certain things.
Yeah. I mean, for example,
smell of someone who walked past instead of whether or not they were carrying a gun.
The word is you're primed to take on things in a certain way. Like if you're sober and sensible and you're looking at the world very practically at that moment and you see someone pull out a gun and shoot someone else, you could probably remember those details. You know, at 10, 15 and 30 seconds, the guy produced a Volta PPK handgun and discharged two shots through the bathroom door. On a more emotional level, you might say, well, the guy was hysterical. He was screaming and shouting. You remember different things. So what Ben is saying is these scientists, to answer Mubs' question in a roundabout way, instead of taking away the memory, you can't delete the memory. What you can do is remove the emotion attached to the memory that makes it either good or bad.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
But I know this seems like a bit of an abstract analogy, but, you know, considering what we sort of touched on last week about, you know, untagging your ex's pictures on Facebook.
Yeah.
Isn't this kind of what makes you human, though? And it's part of your experience. I know in an extreme example, like, for example, being raped, I'd get why you'd sort of want to get the emotion, or not even sort of, definitely why you'd want to get, you know, the horrible
And we all
feeling.
Know someone somewhere is going to say, oh, well, you know, I felt bad about that dress I wore at Mama Trick Dance, and I don't want to remember that.
Yeah.
And they're going to abuse this sort of technology and this new science. But hell, let's try it anyway. I think we could do more good than bad.
Who would be up for it here?
Me?
With no hesitation?
No hesitation. You know, bad things happen to you throughout your life, Sia. Like, there are moments that I'd be like, yeah, if I didn't have to remember that ever again, I'd be better off.
I sort of have it already. This is not a big admission. I just don't...
Hold on to things.
I really don't. And if I've had bad experiences, and I know I have, I'm aware of them, I don't hold on to it. I don't make it a thing. Maybe I've already got these norepinephrine agents going on in my head. I don't get, you know, bogged down in that stuff. I'm just lucky. It's pure luck. I don't think I've got any special skills here. Some people have a chemical setting here, and other people, another person might have a chemical setting in the opposite direction. Some people are consumed by their bad memories.
Mm.
They live their lives in perpetual fear that those bad memories are coming back every other day. And they do. Somehow I've got a file, and I can empty the trash. Like your computer, when you go in and you delete stuff and you just empty the trash, I empty the trash. That's why people will tell me that they're really hurt and they, you know, something I did or said 7 years ago is still bothering them. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, but I don't even remember that.
But that's exactly what it is, Gareth. It's about taking files, and it's how you prioritize them. It can be there every single day you look at it, or you literally delete it, throw it in the trash.
Yeah, and if you had the option to throw it in the trash, then that's what you would do. You would select that option.
So a lot of people don't have that ability because they place a lot of importance on things, because a lot of people harbor certain issues. And this is what this whole study is about. It's about taking away the emotion. Gareth is a psychopath, so he doesn't have emotion.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
So that is why he's so good at it.
Really? No, but also there's a difference.
It's an attribute of positivity towards you.
Psychopath, that's a little extreme.
But no, but
you've admitted that many times
in
the show.
No, there's also a difference between, you know, issues and traumas. I mean, I'm talking about actual traumas.
Yeah.
Because that stuff stays with you.
Well, that's obviously a lot more difficult.
Yes.
But that's the thing.
No, that's the stuff I'm talking about.
It's a breakdown process, which it's obviously a lot more in-depth.
Yeah.
And that's where this whole process becomes more important to people. But Gareth's concepts are sound. That's what I'm saying.
All right. A couple of messages before we get to Lisa. Lisa and her guitar are our guests this morning, by the way. All right? Not just Lisa on her own. She's bringing her guitar in as well. And maybe we'll interview the guitar as well. Just talk
through
what
the guitar has to say.
Because you could read what an instrument's thinking. Yeah, it just has to make the appropriate sounds. Carla says, morning, guys. Wishing you an excellent week. We're on our way to get a stand set up at the Homemakers Expo at the Dome. Is Randburg close to anywhere fun in Johannesburg?
Well,
Randburg.
Hey. I live in Randburg.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, now he's mincing his words.
No. Are you close to a factory? It's a very industrial area, Randburg.
I'm Rodsburg. Close to great family-friendly spots.
Like, come, share them with Carla so you can go there.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm thinking, but like, family-friendly isn't the place.
Carla, what kind of fun are you looking for in Rondberg?
I mean, are you the kind of guy who masturbates at work, or are you the kind of guy who likes long philosophical conversations?
Because there are also strip clubs.
What, in Rondberg?
Well, yeah, isn't there Lollipop Lounge?
Lollipop Lounge.
Oh, yes. Okay, if that's what you're looking for, Carla, that's where you can go. But, I mean, why do we immediately go to the bottom of the trough? What's wrong with us?
Well, no, just taking this hour into concert.
That's why we're asking. We went from family-friendly to strip club because that's the scale. That's
we're
the
well-rounded
range.
Here.
All right. Go on. We can get. You need to zero in on what you're looking for, Carla. Maybe we can help you. I think the pill would be good for some, says Michelle. I think my experience has shaped me. My divorce was very hard and painful, but I learned a lot from it.
Mm.
Sorry, just back to Mavs's point. It's like it's actual traumas, I think, is the real thing here.
Right.
You get rid of that, that's you going better. The other stuff, like Michelle says, it also makes you stronger.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, divorce can be traumatic to some people, but it is this old cliche thing of when you know better, you do better. So you're informed by what happens and you feel like a stronger person. So I do think it does play a bit of a role, hey?
All right. We're pretty much out of time, but there are a couple of other messages here about Ben, you've been watching too much Black Mirror. Well, I finally got to watch episode 1 and 2 of Black Mirror, finally, after all this time. Well,
okay. He's on the train.
We got to talk about this tomorrow. There's no time now. If we go into it now, I'm going to keep our guest waiting all day. Someone also, just on the issue of Teen Suicide Prevention Week, best way to check this out is to have a login to your child's phone so you can watch what's going on. I found out about stuff that happened to her years ago and how she cut herself. Obviously, you don't have to confront her directly about what you read, but rather make up or share your own story with them. And how you overcame that, it really works. Well, then there's questions about should you know everything about your child? Some parents think that that's their right and they're entirely, you know,
entitled
to knowing everything about their kid. Other people would rather not. They'd rather respect their child's privacy. I don't know. Not a parent. But there we go. Best way for this parent to check things out is to actually have the logins to the phone. I'm so happy that this is not something I have to be intimately involved with because those choices are difficult. And again, I'll say parents are some of the bravest people I know and in some cases some of the most terrible people I know because they pass on so much good and so much bad to the next generation. And there's so much of them that plays a role in all of that. I wouldn't want to have to make these choices. Do I need my kids' logins for their phone? What if I find things that are really unpalatable and undesirable? I don't know. I wouldn't be the right person to deal with that. All right, enough about us. Let's get on to talking to Lisa and taking your thoughts. You know what to do, Cliff Central, as all these messages I've been reading have come in. WhatsApp us on 0797842090. You can WeChat message us as well. And you could tweet us at cliffcentral.com for that and a whole lot more. Good morning. It's Monday. It's a rainy, wet Monday in Johannesburg and across some parts of South Africa. Just the kind of weather you need on a Monday to get you fired up for the day. I like the rain. What can I say? When you walk outside into that rain, it wakes you the hell up.
Let's take the rain over Dineo.
Well, it seems like this is as a result of Dineo.
Yeah.
There we go.
CliffCentral.com.